So this is Scrum Under a Waterfall. If this was not the talk you intended to come to, I will not be offended if you get up and leave. Anyone? No? Nothing? All right. Sweet. So I am Benjamin Day. I'm based out of Cambridge, Massachusetts. I am a Visual Studio ALM MVP, which basically means that I do Team Foundation Server consulting, do a lot of stuff with Scrum, do a lot of architecture consulting. Basically, if your team is having problems, like psychological problems on your teams, I will come and help you out with that. All teams are crazy, right? We've all worked on crazy teams. Sometimes you need help. It's okay. You're okay, I'm okay. All right, so I also am a certified trainer via scrum.org, so I teach two different classes, Professional Scrum Developer, PSD, and Professional Scrum Foundations. I am www.benday.com, benday at benday.com. Feel free to send me questions or comments. And then I am at benday on Twitter. I would semi-halfway encourage you to heckle me during the session, but keep it clean. You know, I actually said that to one audience before. I'm like, feel free to heckle me during my presentation. And then some dude came up to me afterwards. He's like, you would not believe what I wrote during your presentation. It was horrific. And I logged on. I'm like, yeah, it was horrific, dude. People are going to read that. You know that Twitter is available to the public, right? And he didn't know that. He was really surprised. And that was the end of his career. And that's why Bill Gates left Microsoft. All right. So first off, what do I mean by waterfall? So waterfall, I'm thinking plan-driven. So anything you do in Microsoft Project, I'm thinking Gantt charts. You know, if you're thinking start dates and end dates, phases, you know, you've got design phase, requirements phase, development phase, QA phase, save the project phase. That's what I have in mind when I'm thinking waterfall. So Scrum Under a Waterfall is the combination, and I'm going to abbreviate it SUW so I don't have to write it 68,000 times during that during the presentation. But I'm thinking Scrum plus plan-driven or Agile plus plan-driven. So Scrum and Agile are kind of roughly in that same thing. Like Scrum is a child class of Agile, Agile being the base class. We're all nerds here, so you get that, right? So that's the idea. So handful of assumptions on this. One, I'm going to assume that Scrum Under a Waterfall exists. Yeah, I see people shaking their heads. How many of you agree that Scrum Under a Waterfall exists? Awesome. Okay, so partly I put this in here because I was afraid that I would get up on stage in front of people and they'd be like, you are so full of it, Day. You have no idea what you're talking about. That doesn't exist. My team does nothing but pure Scrum. Sure. The second part is that I think that the value of Scrum and Agile is settled. It's a good thing. And for the purpose, for the next, you know, what do we have now? 71 minutes and 15 seconds. If you could agree with me that Scrum and Agile are actually okay, that would be nice. It makes the presentation go a lot more smoothly that way, if I don't have to defend Scrum and Agile for the next 75 minutes. So there's this thing called the Chaos Report. And they're published by the Standish Group, and they profile a whole bunch of different projects over time. And they basically will say, you know, how many projects were a raging success, how many were complete failures, and then how many are in between, challenged, right? And an interesting statistic from a recent study from them is that, well, you have an awful lot more successful projects if you're using Agile. So the pie on the right, 42% were successful, as opposed to 14% in the waterfall world. That's a pretty big difference in success rates. Now, the number of challenged is roughly the same. You know, we're inside inside a 10 points difference. But that really important one is that 29% of waterfall projects just absolutely failed. Now, in my five-day TFS class, I talk through a slide that I pulled out of a defense software engineering journal, and they were talking about graphing the likelihood of success as your project crosses the $10 million boundary and goes beyond that, and the chances of success was like 0%. It like went down to like greater than 0% chance of success. Not exactly zero, but pretty close. So you get some good results. if you're using Agile. So my whole take throughout this is that Scrum under a waterfall is not necessarily the most comfortable place to be in the universe, okay? But it's a fact of life. So what I'm trying to do here is I'm going to talk you through what you can actually, how you can think about the two working together, how you can perhaps make it smoother, and then at the end we're going to wrap up with some demos with Team Foundation Server and Microsoft Project Server. That is assuming that my computer, which has been blue screening like crazy this morning, does not blue screen in the middle of my demos, which would be really funny, and you can all laugh at me and point. Ready? You want to practice right now? So pretend I just blue screened. Like, ah! Can someone do the one from, like, The Simpsons? Like, ha-ha! There you go. All right. So Scrum under waterfall, difficult place to be. And let's go to a project management luminary. You can drive with your feet, doesn't mean it's a good idea. Now, if you guys know the album that actually came from, it was significantly dirtier than that. I'm cleaning it up for public consumption. But it's a difficult place to be, and you probably don't want to necessarily sit there for your entire life or, you know, inside of your enterprise. So if you happen to work at one of those companies, what do you actually do about it? So, yeah, you could quit and protest, but granted, the employment market for software developers is actually fairly good, so that might be a viable option. Not necessarily the best option, though. Perhaps the more responsible and resume-compliant way to do it would be to actually try to figure out how to make it work. So someone's paying you to write the software, right? They don't necessarily know everything about software. They're paying you to write the software because they're not experts in writing software. So thinking about medicine and informed consent and whatnot, if it's not necessarily the best place to be when you're working Scrum under a waterfall, your job is to help your bosses and your organization figure out why they're actually doing Scrum under a waterfall, how to make it better, how to make it work, and how to perhaps move away from it. So I am incredibly practical. I am not a robes and sandals Scrum guy, even though I am certified to teach robes and sandals Scrum. I definitely try to see both sides, and I recognize that we are being paid to write software, so the people that are paying generally get to call how we dance, okay? And also, change is not going to happen overnight. I have done enough of these Scrum implementation projects and Scrum coaching projects over time to realize that sometimes that it takes years to actually go from being waterfall to Scrum, even if everybody really, really wants to do it. So a little bit about comparisons and motivations between the two. So thinking about waterfall versus Scrum Agile, down the left-hand side, we've got all the waterfall traits. Right-hand side, we've got Scrum Agile. So first off, with waterfall, we're definitely thinking about requirements documents. Everyone kind of agree with me on that? Like, you've got that requirements phase in the beginning, and you've figured everything out, and that's going to be the way we go. In Scrum and Agile, you really don't have so much in the way of requirements. You got product backlog items if you're doing Scrum. It's got some acceptance criteria. There's nothing that prohibits you from writing some sort of a requirements document, but it's kind of discouraged because it's a lot of extra work that, well, doesn't really buy you a whole lot. And then in waterfall versus Scrum, there's the idea of how much customer involvement you have. In waterfall, especially if you're working on some big government contract, they come up with the big requirements document up front, and then you ship them the software at the end, and maybe you check in once in a while to see what's going on, but you do not have day-to-day involvement. Inside of Scrum Agile, hopefully you've got day-to-day involvement. And if you have questions for your product owner and that product owner is not available or the stakeholders are not available for you, that's considered to be a bit of a dysfunction that you actually need to take care of. Start to finish project plan. So basically the idea in waterfall that you can define how the entire thing's going to work. In Scrum Agile, you're really planning just for the sprint that you got, and maybe two or three sprints out, you got half of an idea of what's going to happen. But for the most part, well, you're not winging it, but your plan evolves. How many of you think that Scrum is just winging it? Awesome. Perfect. How many of you are not paying attention? Okay. just checking. I probably will ask you that from time to time, like, anyone not paying attention? Okay. Waterfall tasks are assigned. In Scrum, we generally try to avoid doing assigned tasks. Then you got the changes in team size, phases for delivery. You know, for the phases for delivery, at the end of perhaps 6 months or 4 months, you're going to deliver some working software. Inside of Scrum Agile, you are delivering working software every 30 days or less. So that's a pretty big difference in mindset right there. And then resistance to change versus change as a feature. And then how do you do contract negotiations? So considering that Standish report, the chaos report that shows the various successes versus failure rates for Scrum versus Waterfall, why does anyone still do Waterfall? I think it's because it comes really naturally. So a lot of people tend to think of, well, if I'm going to build a house, I'm not going to build from the roof down. I'm going to have a plan, and I'm going to do the foundation first, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to put in the electrical, and I'm going to put the roof on, and it's going to be glorious. And it's dot, 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 dot. Why can't you do that in software development? Well, one of the things I think that makes it very different is that there are only a handful of moving parts in your house. In software, it's all moving parts. And they all move against one another. Like, every method can pretty much talk to every other object and method that's in your system. If you've got some junior developer that's, you know, making direct references to the database from your UI layer and connecting and doing SQL Server calls right from, you know, code behinds, that's more moving parts. There's a whole bunch of things that can go wrong. And it just doesn't work the same. It's not quite the same thing as building a house. But it Waterfall just kind of feels like it's just kind of makes sense, right? And it really feels good to have that plan, doesn't it? You're like, we got the dates, we've thought this through. It's like, well, this by, you know, October 1, we're going to be all done with this, and we'll knock out all these tasks. We're just going to work them all the way through. It's going to be awesome. What can possibly go wrong? Right? And what's really important, right, is that it helps managers to manage. So it justifies their existence. So with that project plan, you're pinning down what you're actually going to build, right? So it makes you feel like now we have certainty, and now we're conquering the universe. We're just going to go, and it's going to be fantastic. There's no uncertainty. We've wrung all that certainty out because we planned the heck out of this thing, and we're good. And that's kind of why Waterfall. So why Scrum and Agile? Well, I'm kind of a Scrum Agile guy. And I've come to see over time that we really just don't know what's going on. There's a lot of uncertainty in software development. You think you understand how you're going to code some feature or the requirements of that feature. And until you get into it, you really have no idea. Once you get into it, how many of you have run into this? Where you start coding on some feature that you had absolute certainty on, and then you get to one little bit, and you're like, damn. Yeah, lots of you. So what Scrum Agile is trying to do is we're trying to acknowledge that that actually exists. And we're also trying to be empirical. So empirical means we're going to measure how we did in the past, and we're going to use that measurement to hopefully predict how we're doing in the future. As opposed to if you're doing a waterfall, and you've come up with this project plan that has estimated all of these tasks and, you know, dependencies upon dependencies, and you've estimated all this stuff, that's really estimated based on not a heck of a lot. So also, we're going to say forecast as opposed to commitment, especially in Scrum. So we are not necessarily saying we are definitely going to deliver this on this date. We're going to say we are aiming to deliver this on this date. And it's also self-organized. So our teams are going to figure out how to actually get this stuff done, as opposed to the plan being imposed on us from on high. We're going to collaborate with our bosses to helpfully do a really good job. Because who knows how to build the system better than the people that are going to build the system, right? Kind of, sort of makes sense. So a good question to ask yourself, how many of you have ever seen a company that's agile at the top, and then the teams decide, no, we're waterfall. Screw this agile stuff. That's for crazy people. Right? Kind of tells you something about who each part is actually for. So waterfall really is more of a management thing. Agile is and Scrum is more for us developers that are sitting in the trenches actually doing the work. So another thing is trust. How many of you trust your managers? Yeah, not a whole lot. And for you managers, how many of you trust your teams? Okay. Now, for the sake of the recording, that was maybe like 10% of the room. Grand total. Like, that's pretty grim. But not unexpected because, well, we've got some problems between the Scrum and Agile world a little bit. Excuse me, not Scrum and Agile, Waterfall and Agile. So the Waterfall people think that Agilist people are basically a bunch of Birkenstock-wearing hippies with braided armpit hair and smell really bad, right? And our estimates are always just ridiculously not even close. Like, we're just, it's like, how long is that going to take? 8 hours. How long does it take? 58 zillion hours. So we're always super, super behind, and they interpret that as lazy and incompetent because their plan is awesome. We nailed that plan. That plan was great, except for the people that are actually implementing it. They're idiots. And then we got bugs and all that kind of stuff. And really, the waterfall people tend to look at this and say, it's just too complex to not have a plan. Software development is huge. How can we possibly do this without knowing what we're doing? You can kind of see that. Then the other side, we've got why do Agilists think that waterfall people are nuts? And a lot of it is because that plan is something called voluntold. Anyone know what voluntold is? Everyone heard of that? All right. So I have a friend who spent 9 years in the Navy, and he's tooling around on a ship somewhere on deployment. And his commanding officer assembled a bunch of the sailors and was like, hey, we're looking for volunteers to go hang out on the ground in Iraq for a little while. Which they signed up on the Navy to be on the boats, not on the ground. And basically, they knew that if they didn't volunteer, that they were going to pick volunteers. It's like, oh, no volunteers? Hey, you're going to Iraq, and you're going to Iraq, and you're going to Iraq, and you're going to Iraq. That's voluntold. You have been volunteered to go do that. So we also know that we're basically being voluntold all the time about what these estimates and what the plan are. Plan is supposed to be. So our managers will come to us and say, for feature ABC, how long do you think that's going to take? I don't know. 40 hours? Right? And you're like, would you please get out of my office? Because I'm trying to get this other work done. And remember, you asked me like 5 minutes ago to fix this production bug. Yeah, whatever. 40 hours. Get out of my office. So we say just enough to make them go away, and it's always wrong. Because largely, they didn't give us anything in particular to estimate. You know, maybe they give us this, you know, 26-page printout of a requirements document, but how do you really turn that into something useful and estimate 26 pages worth of stuff? So we're kind of looking at this, and we're saying, well, this is way too complex to plan because everything's going to change as soon as we get into it. So not fantastic. So, point of agreement, we're completely out of our minds. We think they're dumb. They think we're dumb. There you go. Point of agreement number two, if it's worth doing, it's probably complex. So notice on the waterfall side, they're thinking, this problem is too complex to not have a plan. And on the other side, on the Agile Scrum side, we're looking at it and saying, well, this is too complex to actually plan. But we both agree that there is complexity there. So what do you actually do about this? Which takes us into making it work. So, you know, with your grandparents, they've been married for like 45, 50, 60 years, and they freaking hate each other. Hate each other. They cannot stand each other. They sit in stony silence at the dining room table and make Thanksgiving wicked awkward. That's Scrum under a waterfall. We've got two processes that don't like each other, that aren't really meant to hang out together, but oftentimes have to hang out together anyway, because it's in the best interest of both sides to actually do that. Like, your 85-year-old grandfather and grandmother are not about to go get a divorce and start, you know, swinging or whatever. So, same kind of thing inside of a lot of our enterprises. Like, the people that are paying are still in the waterfall world. They're asking us to do software development, and, well, software developers have kind of figured some stuff out over the last 10, 15, 20 years, and we've kind of figured out that Agile and Scrum kind of get some good results. So we know that for managing our stuff, it's probably a good idea to do an Agile or a Scrum process, and we kind of have to humor the people that are above us that are doing waterfall or that want us to think in waterfall and report into their waterfall architect, excuse me, report into their waterfall process, right? And it's fair because they're paying us, right? It all comes down to money. Now, I love writing software, but if I wasn't getting paid, I would probably do something else. Anyone else the same way? Maybe they go off and like work at Starbucks or raise goats, make goat cheese. Yes, goat cheese in the back. We've got one vote for goat cheese. I might go off and play music again. But anyway, so why do people actually do Scrum under a waterfall? If it's so uncomfortable, there's a lot of different reasons. The one that I see the most often is required by contract. So you see a lot of government agencies that say, we want this project done waterfall, and it says it in the contract. So the company that's actually going to go implement this thing is required by law, required by contract to actually go do this thing using waterfall. So, okay, that's great. A lot of times, are that other transitional case where you've got one team or a couple teams, and it's like, how about you guys go see what those stinky sandal-wearing hippies are doing and go run a project using Agile and report back? But in the meantime, would you mind giving us status reports and dates? And then, finally, it's just 'cause. Sometimes you work for someone that's just like, that's just the way I want to do it. I'm paying, go do it that way, or find another job, right? So what you really need to do is you need to try to figure out how to leverage the strengths of each. And as much as I'm sort of beating on waterfall, there are strengths in that. So what you need to do is, well, kind of think about what are these strengths? What can you bring from one to introduce the other and vice versa? So first off, you're going to use Scrum for managing your day-to-day. Because thinking about, or Scrum, Agile, I'm going to say Scrum, and just, if you hear me say Scrum, I mean Agile and vice versa. So in Scrum, you've got that daily stand-up where you're reviewing what you did in the last 24 hours, you're talking about what you're going to do in the next 24 hours, and you're trying to make sure that you're optimizing customer value and getting to the point where you can deliver that sprint goal, that working software at the end of the sprint. So on a 24-hour basis, you're kind of checking in on everybody and making sure that everything's still okay. What'd you do yesterday? What are you going to do today? Remaining work, any impediments? And if you have any problems, hopefully you detect them and you fix it. So instead of stumbling through for the entire sprint, you're going to fix that now when you know about it, as opposed to letting it fester. So that will hopefully allow you to detect problems that are happening daily or throughout the days or throughout the weeks in your sprint. Another thing is that Scrum and Agile unofficially tend to really like test-driven development. They focus on working software. And then what I think is really important is definition of done, aka DOD. How many of you have heard of DOD before? How many of you on your teams have a written definition of done? Okay. Now, the rest of you need a written definition of done. If there is anything in software that is close to a silver bullet, it is a written definition of done. It takes an awful lot more than you think to get a requirement fully completed so that you can ship it. We've all probably heard done versus done done. It's like, I'm done with that feature, and your project manager says, you done or done done? It's like, oh, I'm only done. I mean, it compiles. It doesn't really work. I haven't got a clue how I'm going to deploy it. and nobody else has ever looked at it. So done versus done, done. So what tends to happen to you on projects is if you're not focused on what definition of done really is, you get to the end of your sprint or you get to the point where you're ready to release and you're like, okay, let's package this all up and ship it. And it's like, whoa, hold up there, Charlie. We don't have servers. We don't have a database create script. I sure as hell don't know what the lookup values are that are required for my screen. Yada, 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 yada. You have all this hidden doneness deficit, all this work that you have to do before you can actually go live. And that's when you find out that it's like, well, we just went from being not late to being about 6 weeks late. So get a written definition of done, review it, and make sure that you're following it on your team. That'll really help so you don't have those surprises. And that's what we're going to use Scrum for inside of Scrum Under Waterfall, is we're going to look at these things and make sure that we don't have any surprises. So on Waterfall's side, probably you're going to need it for multi-team coordination. Like Scrum and Scrum of Scrums is pretty good, but when you need to really scale up, it starts to become a little bit of a problem. Now, I'm not saying that it can't scale up. It can. It obviously can. But let's take Visual Studio, for example. They are Scrum, 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 Waterfall. And they need to do that because they have so many teams they have to coordinate. And if you're going to have informal communication between all these Scrum teams, it gets a little unwieldy. And they have to do release planning, so, sometimes you have to interface with other parts of your organization. Like, your software has to go out in a particular release on a certain date, and then maybe you have to talk to your marketing people so that they're getting ready to start advertising and letting people know. You've got to talk to the sales team to make sure that they're putting into the pipeline so that people maybe, bought your software. So you kind of sometimes have to think about that and how you integrate with the rest of the organization. We in the Scrum world or in the Agile world sometimes tend to be a little bit IT-centric. Anyone kind of agree or disagree? Yeah, we think a lot about ourselves because we're awesome. And occasionally we have to be reminded by the business that there are other people that live outside of that little zoned-in area. And that slide is really weird right there. So, okay. So I will read it off to you so you can actually read it. So differences for Scrum and Agile. So one of the things that's changing is that we're not going to have so much of a product backlog anymore because we're going to have that project plan that's coming out of Microsoft Project. So there's going to be a de-emphasis on sprint planning. I'm not saying don't do it, but it's not going to be quite as collaborative as you do if you're just doing straight Scrum. And you're probably going to have less negotiations inside that sprint about what the scope is actually going to be on particular PBIs or what this task means or whatever. Okay? But you still should have those conversations with people. You probably just don't have as much wiggle room because it's baked into that project plan that we're going to do it a certain way, and there are probably requirements documents that say this is how we're going to do it. So what's kind of nice there is that you still have the opportunity to develop and deliver the exact wrong piece of software. What's going to stay the same, though, is you're going to do that daily scrum. You still want to check in with everybody to make sure that we're all pulling in the same direction and no one's having problems. You're going to do sprint burndown chart so that you know, are we on target for actually delivering stuff inside the sprint? You're still going to have sprints. So one of the big things with using sprints under Scrum Under Waterfall is that you're going to say, okay, well, between this point and this point, we think we're going to get this much work done. So it's kind of like in the scientific method, you have a hypothesis, and then you, at the end, you check that hypothesis, did it actually match? So you're going to hypothesize at the beginning, we forecast we're going to deliver this amount of work, and at the end, you're going to say, did we actually deliver this amount of work? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, then high five. If the answer is no, why no? What went wrong? And that leads you into those retrospectives you're going to do. We're going to discuss what went right, what went wrong, and what can we improve for next time, all that kind of stuff. You're still going to look at what you're actually doing inside of your sprints and hopefully improve your process as you go. So every 30 days or so, you're going to take a pause and you're going to say, how are we doing? Now, in Waterfall, you generally take a pause when you hit that milestone, right? And what tends to happen with that is you hit that milestone, you're like, oh my God, we are so late. I better find a new job. So also, you're going to focus on the definition of done, and you're going to have that sprint review. So working software, no slides, no demo-ware. You're going to, at the end of that sprint, if your stuff, if you manage to get it done, definition of done, compliant done, not done done, done versus done done, you're going to demo that stuff, and you're going to decide if it actually is good or not. Okay. So some risks of Scrum under waterfall. I hope the rest of these slides are not all super small like this. I have so much room. I could put so much more stuff on this slide. So impedance mismatch and poor communication. This is one of the big risks in Scrum under waterfall. So impedance mismatch, you might have heard of the object relational impedance mismatch problem. So basically in the object relational impedance mismatch, it's a difference between how objects are persisted versus how tables and relational databases versus objects. They think very, very differently about their data. Similar problems inside of Scrum under Waterfall. Waterfall tends to think about their project plans in one way. Scrum Agile thinks of it a different way. And you can very easily get into some poor communication because not everyone has that shared understanding. And more importantly, there's a lack of trust a lot of times. So that lack of trust can really lead into this horrible problem where you're running two sets of books. So the Scrum Agile team kind of knows what the weather is, and the weather might be really bad. But since we don't have any really good way to report up the chain, and we pretty much get spanked whenever we give bad news to our bosses, what are we going to do? How's everything going on your project? Awesome. I got to go to the bathroom. I'll see you later. Right? So that really leads into that everything's going just fine up until the moment that it isn't. Like, you see that on waterfall projects all the time. You're like, wow, we are 2 weeks away from this big release. This is, everything's great. And this is the project managers reporting to the executives. Everything's going swell. We got it done. There's zero bugs. Da-da-da-da-da-da. It's going to be great. The team is thinking, oh my god, we are so screwed. And then at some point, they try to actually do a release. And, a practice release. Let's deploy into the staging environment and see if we can do it. Answer, not really. And that's when you find out, oh, well, we forgot to do this and this, and we didn't have a definition of done, so most things are done as opposed to done done, and da-da-da-da-da. And everything is now a disaster. So you go to from being exactly on time to being 2 to 6 months late. Little wiggle room right there. And another risk of Scrum under a waterfall is that, well, those waterfall people can get a little panicky sometimes when they're looking at that burndown chart. So you can use the burndown chart for evil. And let's see. So if we've got it right here, we've got that big, thick black line. And is this a laser pointer? Yeah, sweet. So you can, that's your ideal trend line right there, basically about 45 degrees down. And if everything is below that line or touching that line, you are doing pretty well. How many of your burndown charts actually look like that? No, that's what I thought. So probably what's happening is that you're going way above that line a lot, especially at the beginning. It's going to spike above that line as you figure out more stuff that has to happen. And you're going to kind of wiggle around, but you generally are not exactly on track. So if you've got these waterfall people or your managers, I mean, they don't even have to be waterfall. They could be just your product owner coming in. And looking at that, and they're saying, you're running hot. How come this is above the ideal trend line? Ah! White knuckling school of project management. They start asking you questions like, what's going on? Why are you behind? You're late. What's going on? And what that's going to tend to make the team do is perhaps not be exactly honest with stuff, right? That's a pretty big problem. It's like, I don't want anyone to hassle me. So when I figure out that my task actually has 45 hours worth of remaining work as opposed to 4, I'm just not going to let anybody know. Right? What could possibly go wrong with that? So what you need to do is, this is a communication problem. That you've got to sort of educate the people that are above you in the waterfall stack or the executive stack or management stack and say, look, this is for the team. We use this to know whether or not we're hot or cold. We're going to make adjustments based on the fact that we are running into problems. This is not necessarily for you, though. So butt out. So I'm not necessarily saying that you should lock down permissions on this so that it's like, if in executive group, deny. But the Scrum Master might want to actually consider doing that if they can't manage to control the executives and the executives can't manage to just not look. So a way of actually saying it is kind of like, you know, with your 401k, stock market's been awesome lately. I generally don't like to look at it. And I'm just like, I'm not retiring for 40 years or so. Let's just not look at this right now. How the performance is doing in my 401k day to day is not necessarily something I have to look at. Same deal on this. If you're a manager, you probably don't need to look at the burn down every day. Any questions so far? How many of you think I absolutely suck? This is the worst presentation you've ever seen in your life. It's already on Twitter. Awesome. Tells a lot of jokes, no content, not very smart. How did he get into tech ed? Fail. Send. Retweet. Yeah. Okay, so making Scrum under a waterfall work is kind of like, well, your grandparents that hate each other. They kind of need to make peace, they kind of set some ground rules, and that's how you go. So one of the big ones you got to get past is when things change in your schedule. In waterfall, a change in the schedule is considered to be a bug, and in Agile or Scrum, it's considered adapting. It's understanding new information and changing. So it's a feature in Scrum Agile. So you kind of have to set some ground rules there and say, look, this is the way we think about it. So when we tell you that there's something going wrong, well, not going wrong, but that the dates are going to have to shift, you should take that as a benefit as opposed to giving us a spanking because we were wrong. And another one is I think you should try to avoid earned value. So I bet a lot of you have run into this phenomenon. You're like working on some task and you're 2 days in and you're 80% done. And that 20% takes about another 15 days. Right? That always happens. So if you can avoid doing that earned value, I am percent done, it will be really helpful. And that's one of those Scrum things. It's definition of done compliant. It's done or it's not done. And then another thing is transparency. You gotta be honest, both directions. And this is one of the things that Team Foundation Server's integration with Microsoft Project Server will really help you out with, is transparency. Well, so hopefully you've heard of Team Foundation Server before. Anyone not heard of TFS? Awesome. How many of you use TFS? Oh, that is what I like to see. I'm going to be employed, yay. it's always a little scary when like people are coming up to me. It's like, oh, you know what's the coolest thing? GitHub. Damn. I specialize in Team Foundation Server. I'm going to be homeless. This is great. All right, so I don't need to go through that. Well, yeah, I do. So Team Foundation Server is for more than just version control. If you're using it only for version control, it's pretty good, but there's an awful lot more features that are in there, like project management and automated builds and reporting, all that kind of stuff. So I would recommend you try to do that. But there's this nice little extensibility thing that's happening here, and Microsoft has extended it so that you can plug it into Microsoft Project Server. So Microsoft Project Server is the enterprise project management product from Microsoft, and it is this nice back end to Microsoft Project. So if you think in waterfall, if you're planning your enterprise projects and all that kind of stuff, and you're thinking about tasks and approval workflows and resource pools and whatnot, this is probably what you want to use. And it's a plug-in to SharePoint. It's got this slick web interface, and then it also you can connect to it from Microsoft Project. So with this integration feature pack in 2010, and it's part of the, it's this integration pack is distributed along with the bits in 2012. It's going to allow you to do bidirectional sync between your TFS team projects and your Microsoft Project Server. So you can take stuff from your enterprise project plans in Microsoft Project push them down to TFS, and vice versa. So what this is getting to is that transparency thing and not managing two sets of books. So if you're managing two sets of books where the Agile team knows that, or Scrum team knows that we are kind of having some trouble, we're a little bit behind, yada, 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 and then the waterfall people think, yep, they're doing great, I don't hear any problems. This is helping to take care of that. So there's one set of books, and we synchronize back and forth, and we let the people work in the tools that they want to work in. And it kind of goes something like this. But I'm going to do demos instead of talking through this slide. Basically, you go through, you can define a bunch of stuff in either product. You say, I want to publish this back and forth. And then that synchronization process is going to go check to make sure if there are updates on this side, it's going to push them to Team Foundation Server and vice versa. And what's kind of nice is that in Microsoft Project, it allows you to do some roll-ups that are in there so you can total stuff up and you know how many, you know, what the dates are actually going to be. It really helps out. You know, in TFS 2010, it's a little bit difficult to do stuff with dates because, well, Team Foundation Server doesn't really think dates. It thinks more like, what's the pile of work we have to get done and what's the remaining hours? And in Microsoft Project, a lot of times you've got a requirement and you've got a bunch of child tasks and you want to roll them up and know, okay, how many hours total do we have left? What does that mean for the dates and for the dependencies between these things, the constraints? You know, what does that mean for the overall schedule? This synchronization process really helps you out with doing that. So, let's do some demos. And so far, oh, I think my computer is in the middle of actually blue screening. Yeah, ready? Okay, on three. Maybe I should use a Mac? No, I'm not using the Mac for Hyper-V. I appreciate the sentiment, though. Okay. Oh! Ready, on three, give me the ha-ha. One, two, three. Ha-ha! Okay. Oh, man, that was not what I wanted to have happen. Let's, while I'm rebooting, let me go through and do a little bit more stuff. So how much time do I have left? Oh, 32 minutes to fill with no demo. That shouldn't be a problem. What could possibly go wrong? Demos sucked. 0 out of 0. Thank you very much for coming. All right. I have a whole bunch of more slides because everyone loves slides, right? Here we go. That's not what I wanted. Come on, let's go. Extras. All right, so while I'm rebooting this machine, one of the things that I have seen over, you guys can see that, yeah. So one of the things that I've seen over time is that organizations are way too quick to go planned. So how many of you work in financial services? Okay, so for almost all of you, I bet you have a set of reports or Excel spreadsheets or SSRS reports, apps that do reporting, that chew up stuff and do models that your traders use to make gigantic bets, right? So that's running all the time. So those changes that happen are used to make some pretty insane, like billion-dollar bets that happen really fast. And when the traders ask for a change, it goes through zero QA process, right? So I'm thinking about the number of times that I've seen that with my financial services customers, and then I have another customer that is another financial services company. They've got all these same reports that are going crazy all the time, but what they run into is that we've got this application that I'm supporting that doesn't really have, it's not super important, it's not mission critical to the company. And they actually have disaster recovery rankings for stuff where you've got like, it can't be down for more than 2 minutes at a time, and then you've got stuff where it's like, if it never comes back, no one cares. Okay? What is always kind of funny is that on the projects that are low disaster recovery priorities, where there's almost no risk whatsoever on that stuff, that's where they put the most process. So when on this application that I support, if we need to push a release, it literally takes about 3 months to actually get that out. typo on the screen, 3 months for the change. Yet this same organization has all these things that really makes them money that they will deploy it without putting it through any QA whatsoever. So when you're trying to think about, okay, when we run this new project, are we going to run it with Scrum and Agile, or are we going to run it with Waterfall? A lot of times companies tend to go first towards that Waterfall thing. It's like, oh, that feels good, let's do that. And what I would recommend is maybe give it a go and try to see what happens, you know, running it with Agile first. And if it doesn't work, change it and go back to Waterfall. But I think that companies are a little bit too quick to go planned sometimes. And me resurrecting my demos on stage while I am trying to talk is something I did not actually practice. Okay. Anyone have any questions while I am doing this? Yeah. Yeah, so just to repeat the comment in, is that if anyone really knew how low confidence we actually have in our ability to deliver the software that they're asking us to deliver, they would never have paid us in the first place. Does that sound fair? Ah. So to summarize, basically, a lot of times if you're running a project with Waterfall, it takes a lot more money, and people would not sign up for it if we did that. So there's one of my friends, his name is Chad Albrecht. He works for a company called Centair based out of Wisconsin. And he has a presentation, and I believe it is available online, and it's called Agile Economics or Scrum Economics, one of the two. And it is really a fascinating presentation because he will walk you through, you know, if we run it with Waterfall, it's going to cost this, and here's how our bugs are, and here's how many bugs we have, and here's what it costs to do this, dot, 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 and the other thing. And, well, we eventually figure out we don't need this feature, and yada, 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 and here's what it's going to cost to run it in Waterfall. And then here's how we would do it in Agile, and it changes. And the cost difference between the two is really fascinating, and I highly recommend that presentation. So his name is Chad Albrecht, and he works for Centair, and it's called Agile Economics. All right, so let's see if this will work. Oh, your browser session closed unexpectedly. That's weird. Okay, so let's come in here. And so this is our Microsoft Project Servers homepage, and it's got a bunch of stuff in here where we can see our projects. There's a project center, approval center, and if we drill into these guys, it should show us what we've got in here, which is a handful of different projects. We've got an enterprise, and there's a handful of projects that are nested together so that we can see product ABC and product XYZ that sit under the master plan. And, well, you know what? I'm going to open this thing up in Microsoft Project and show you what it looks like. So I'm going to come in here and I'm going to open up the project plan for product ABC. And the demo I'm going to do here is I'm going to show you how you can start collaborating with your, let's come back. Gantt chart. Here we go. This is going to demonstrate some collaboration between the people on the Waterfall side and the Scrum team. So let's say that waterfall people have thought up a handful of new requirements, like, let's see, let me think of some requirements. Let me get anything new. Let's say, since I know that there are a handful of people from MLS, create a new house for sale listing. And let's bring that out. And since we know that we're going to put this into Team Foundation Server at some point, we need to give it a work item type. So I'm going to make it a user story. So a user story is basically a requirement or a PBI. So we'll say user story. And we'll just assign it to demo product owner. And then we're going to have this nice little thing right here that says publish to team project. And I'm going to say yes. Yes, that looks pretty good. And then we'll come into the file menu and we'll say publish. And that'll publish that back into Microsoft Project Server. Watching this little thing go right here. Currently synchronizing data to Microsoft Project Server. Oh, whew. I like when that percentage is not moving. I'm like, oh, not again. Please, no, I can't have two blue screens inside of a single presentation. That's more than I can handle. All right, so I'm going to close this. I'm going to check this in. And now I'm going to go back over into my TFS side. So product owner has said to you, it's like, hey, could you go figure out what the tasks are to make this thing actually work? Sure thing, boss. So we'll come in here and we'll connect to our project. And I've got a work item query right here. And somewhere down towards the bottom, we have user story, create a new house for sale listing. And let's come in here, and since when we're doing planning, we love doing it in Excel, right? Let's open up this query in Excel, come in here, and let's create some tasks. So give ourselves a little bit more room. And let's add a handful of columns in here. Let's say we definitely need finish date, we need start date, and we need remaining work. We'll add those guys in there, and we will say, where's the team project submit stuff? Yeah, I'm just going to add all required. That looks pretty good, right? Okay. So we've got this user story right here, and let's add a child to it. So we'll say design database. That's one good one. And we'll make it a task. And remaining work, let's say that's going to take us 20 hours. That looks pretty good. And we'll assign this to demo developer number one. Is it linked to project server? Yep. And we need one more thing in here, which is the enterprise project plan. So we need to know which project server enterprise project we're actually going to publish this back into. See, if you publish into something in Microsoft Project Server, it'll know, okay, we're publishing into this enterprise project, and this enterprise project is mapped back to this section of your TFS project. It'll do it that way. But if you're going from TFS the other direction, you have to tell it which enterprise project it's going to go to. So in this case, we're going to make it go into ABC. And then let's create just a copy of this thing and just to make it simple. And let's say implement feature. Perfect. And now we'll publish it back. Invalid work item type. I put it on the wrong row. So if I delete this, am I happy? Okay. Oh. Ben isn't a good presenter. All right. Okay, so I published that back, and let's close. Well, let's not close. Let's leave this open. We'll come back in here. We'll rerun our query, and we'll see that Ben isn't a good presenter. And if we double-click into this, if we look at Project Server, it should be linked to Project Server. Let's refresh it one more time. Give that a second. We'll come back over to this one. I guess I didn't tag this right. You have to actually tell it to submit to Project Server, have it be yes. Save that. Let's refresh it. Success. And on this one, it'll be there in a second. All right, so let's come back. And let's say that we have now, we've estimated out what the tasks are going to be. We figured this stuff out. Now we're saying to the project manager, OK, we're good. You can go update your stuff. So let's come back into Microsoft Project, reopen their plan. And if the demo gods are smiling, which they are, we get our two tasks in here that show up automatically. So under there, we've got Ben isn't a good presenter, and then database design. Maybe I should change that. I don't really like the text on this guy. Let's say implement feature. All right, so let's say that we've got some kind of a dependency between the two of them. Maybe we're doing it slightly in reverse, but now we're saying that these things need to happen in some particular order. We've updated that. It's changed the dates for us, so now everything's populated that way, and we can see what the dates actually look like. We're like, yep, that looks great. We can come back and we can publish stuff back up to Project Server. Saving project. It'll publish back and everything will be happy. So now what we've just done is we've demonstrated how each team can work in the tools that they actually want to do. So we have a shared understanding of what is in the project plan. We're able to say, okay, here's what I think it is on my side. Here's what you think it is on your side. You work in your tools, I work in my tools, and we have one set of books that we're replicating back and forth, and everyone agrees on what's going on. Okay? Does that look interesting to anybody? Way interesting. Cool. Is anyone incredibly bored? Is anyone getting a perverse pleasure of watching me sweat, waiting for the next blue screen of death that happens as my hard drives are failing on my demo machine? Yes. It is suspenseful. Trust me. I know that suspense. I am one with the suspense. All right. So let's hop back in. And let's see. Next demo that I'd want to show you is, let's say, in this case right here, we've been working in a team that's pretty chilled out. Okay. The product owner, the people on the waterfall side trust the people that are they're working on the Agile or the Scrum team. They're like, yeah, you tell me what you want to do, and I'll trust you on the dates. And if you've got changes, that's cool. You're cool. I'm cool. We're pretty chilled out. You don't always work with that kind of manager, right? Especially in the waterfall world. They're white-knuckling their project plan. It's like, I think it's going wrong. I want to know about it this instant. So Project Server is really helpful, and it gives you an approval workflow. So if we hop back over into, yeah, let's check this guy in. Let's close it out. If we come back over into Team Foundation Server, and let's look at our thing right here. Let's say we're on a different team. So we were doing a demo off of product ABC. Now we're going to do it off of product XYZ. And on this team, we've got a project manager who is really a control freak, okay? So in this case, they really don't trust the team, but they still want us to be able to do work. Like, let's come in here, and we've got this user story for XYZ, and it's got some tasks in it. Or actually, let's do this one right here. There's no tasks on it. So they said, could you go give me some tasks and some estimates on this stuff? Better be right. Come in, we'll say create new linked work item, and we'll do child task, and let's say, once again, we'll say design database. And we'll say remaining work is going to be 40 because we want to pad our estimates, right? And then we'll say product XYZ. We'll say yes, replicate that back to team foundation, replicate that back to project server. We save it. Let's come back over here and let's create another one, another child. And we'll say implement feature. And remaining work will be 80. Do the same thing again. We're going to replicate it back to product XYZ. Submit to project server, yes. We'll save it. And now we're going to hop back over. Let me just refresh these things and make sure that they actually replicated. Why is it not replicating? Yeah, let's see if it did anyway. Okay, so we'll come over here and let's look at the approval center inside of our project, and it has nothing. Sweet. That's what I want to see. Why is it not replicating? Okay, I'm just going to move on. So if that had actually worked, come on, why is it not working? This should, I've practiced this before. I don't really suck. I'm going to blame it on the blue screen. That's what happened. What ended up happening is you'd get this nice approval that said, hey, Ben Day just published all these changes. He just updated a whole bunch of stuff. Actually, let's go in here and let's change one that already exists. So let's come in here and we'll say, do something important. Let's modify it. And let's say that our remaining work is now 80 hours on this guy and 200 hours on this one. We'll save them all. This should go back in just a second. So we'll come back over here. Nothing. Thanks, Project Server. You're the man. That would come back and would say, hey, we just changed something from 45 hours to 200 hours. And if you're that white-knuckle kind of project manager, you're going to want to know, why did that actually happen? And maybe you'll go have a conversation, and you'll say, why did this actually happen? And you can choose to accept that change or not accept that change. And if it works, if you like, oh, here it is. Sweet. Round of applause for an awesome demo. Thank you. We can drill into these guys, and we can see exactly what's going on. So that synchronization, by the way, also happens on a timer. So doesn't necessarily happen right exactly when you want it. So you can look at what's actually changed, and if you think that that's great, you can say, yep. So let's highlight these two things, and we'll say accept, and we'll say, you're awesome on that change, and then there we go. So that will now replicate back down into the Team Foundation server side, and everything will be happy and wonderful. So once again, if you want that level of control on your project plan, if you're that waterfall person, you can actually do that. And it didn't really take a whole lot from you on the Agile side. You didn't have to do any extra stuff. You didn't have to file out any status reports. You just went into Team Foundation server, you updated your tasks, you hit save, you change remaining work, you hit save, it goes back to project server, and everything's wonderful. So you get to work inside of the tool that you want to work in. There's one set of books. So everyone's looking at the same data. You don't want that case where no one knows. It's like, you didn't tell me that that thing went from 80 hours to 250 hours. It's like, in this case, if you've got the approval workflow on there, it's audited by Project Server. And that project manager had to actually approve that change. So there's no way that you can say, well, you didn't tell me that. So if you're working on something that actually has like real auditing requirements on it, which happens quite often in financial services, medical device industry, medicine, hospitals, what have you, this could be really nice. you've got an extra level of auditing, and you've got a way, a workflow that will run it past the eyeballs of the people that are managing the project so that they definitely know what's going on. Okay? Yeah. So the question is, if you have your tasks and your sprints laid out inside of Microsoft Project, is there any such thing as prioritization anymore? The answer is it depends. So if you've got the dependencies that are set up inside of the project plan, and that's one of the things that's kind of nice about Microsoft Project, is that if you have this one has to happen before this one, that has to happen before this one, that exists inside of Microsoft Project. It doesn't necessarily exist inside of Team Foundation Server. If you want to do it that way, then that's your representation of prioritization. If you want to do prioritization, you can still get in there and you can set that priority in the ranking values so that you can still do that and you can still sort stuff inside of Project Plan, or you can sort it inside of Team Foundation Server. So that data will round trip with you if you want it to. Any other questions? All right. How are we doing on time? Oh, we got a little bit more time. All right. So one last thing I want to show you. So let's come back in here and let's open up that project plan and Microsoft Project again. So inside of Scrum Agile, you're generally thinking about your team, right? Your team is a bunch of people, and hopefully they all stay together, and you know what the composition is. Oh, and the lights are on, and that's it. Thanks for coming. No. That's weird. It's so much more intimate now. Okay, now we're back to normal. Yeah, there's a joke in there somewhere that's inappropriate. I completely lost what I was trying to say. Okay, so on teams inside of Scrum and Agile, we know what the composition of the team is. There's not a lot of anonymity. We know who we're working with, and that's the whole idea. We're trying to do human communication and collaboration as opposed to let's run some gigantic army of developers. Now, if you work for an enterprise, a lot of huge financial services companies run into this, they have resource pools, and they have all kinds of people that they know are underutilized or overutilized, and they can balance them, and they want to know, okay, who's available to actually work on my project? That's a slight difference in how you'd work in Scrum, but what's nice is that Microsoft Project will let you do that. So we can come in here and we can say, build team from enterprise. And it will show us, so it'll read from Active Directory, and I don't have that many people that are showing up here, but we can say, all right, well, we know this guy is a little bit, we don't like him. We don't want him, so let's pull him off the team. Oops, there, remove. And now we'll set, yeah, we'll save that. That looks pretty good. And let's do a little team planner exercise. It's like, let's look at our work. And wow, oops, come back here. Demo developer number one has an awful lot of work going on. And product owner has nothing. Demo developer number two doesn't. Let's say, I don't like that. Let's take some of this work. And let's drag it over here. So we can now drag tasks around inside of Microsoft Project, use it what it's good for, and say, okay, well, I know that's going to happen then, and let's change this so that, okay, we know that that's going to happen like that. So we can visually go and see what's going on and make it work. And then if we just come back in here and we say publish, the stuff that we have... Product owner required, let's do this, save and publish, make that change. We can use Microsoft Project for what it's good for, rearranging tasks and rebalancing our team and taking new resources and assigning them work. We can do that. We hit save, it publishes back in, and now it replicates down to the Scrum team, and now they know what's going on. Round trip, very important on all that stuff. Questions on that one? All right. Let's wrap up. So we'll go back to where I left off before I blue screened. All right. So I've said this a handful of times already, but the big win is that both groups stay inside their preferred tools. So if you're an Agile Scrum person, you don't have to go learn Gantt charts if you don't really want to. And if you're a waterfall person, you don't really have to know about that crazy sandal-wearing hippie stuff that's going on in the Agile world. You stay in your tools. Everybody's happy. Team Foundation Server and that synchronization process will take care of synchronizing what's happening back and forth. And in Scrum under a waterfall, if you want to make it work, and this happens on all your projects. This is Scrum under Scrum and waterfall under waterfall. But it also is Scrum under waterfall, too. Transparency and honesty and credibility is like the absolute most crucial thing for making a project work. So if you can use Team Foundation Server and Microsoft Project and have one set of books and everyone looks at it, it's going to be a lot easier to build trust on your teams. Okay? It's essential. If you don't trust your bosses and they don't trust you, it's going to be an adversarial process and, oh, things are going to be bad. It's not going to be fun going into work when people are accusing you all the time of being a liar. So Team Foundation Server captures everything without judgment. All that data comes in. If you want to do check-ins and automated builds and associating stuff to the project plan, it's fine with that. Full traceability, it's great. So did it make it into source control? Does it work inside the build? Does it meet our definition of done? You know, what's our work item count? All that kind of stuff. Any of these questions you want to ask about what's happening on your project, you can do it, and it's in there. Okay? Project plan happens. Use all those great project and portfolio management tools in Microsoft Project and Project Server. Team Foundation Server is great for us on the dev side. Okay? So if you're doing Scrum under a waterfall, you might want to check out this process. So Brian Hurst from Microsoft wrote this template called GovDev for TFS. So government has this problem quite often. So he's created this template. Works great. It'll help you out for managing this Scrum under a waterfall kind of thing if you're working on a government project. So free on CodePlex. You can go ahead and download that, install it in Team Foundation Server. So in summary, Scrum under a waterfall is kind of an awkward place to be. It could be a transitional form. You're probably going to have trust problems, but you need to talk to your bosses and help them to understand what your needs are and talk to them so that you understand what their needs are. Okay? Got to collaborate. Scrum under waterfall, you can tend to get away from collaboration. It can just start to be this adversarial process. You generally want to get away from that. Team Foundation Server plus Project Server helps you solve that project management impedance mismatch by creating that one set of books and helping everyone work in the tools that they want to work in. And that, in turn, gives you great transparency, which helps you to build trust. Okay? Any last questions? Yes. Yeah, so the question is, what is my definition of done, and do I see it vary from place to place? It varies a lot. My personal definition of done is it compiles in a local box, all the unit tests run. It compiles as part of an automated build, and all the unit tests run on the automated build. I have a deploy script. It's been QA'd. There are no priority one or priority two bugs. And that's basically my core right there. And code coverage is 75% or greater. Yeah. If the task has a dependency on another team's task, does that fit inside the definition of done? Yeah, it would have to. You definitely, like, if it doesn't meet both teams' definition of done, then neither can say that it's done. So, any other questions? Yes. Yep. Okay. 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 Sure. Look, let me interrupt you for 2 seconds before I answer that question. I just want to say thank you very much for coming. We're out of time. Fill out your evaluations and hopefully say nice things about me. Thank you.